which is the greatest life, which a person would do, just as the greatest life, right? Okay, so the Ram says, and the Ram says, this idea is a very difficult idea. Okay, one second, let me get the right page, okay. Right, so the Ram says that people cannot comprehend this. He says, "V'lo yisal mimeno ela sechel pesi asher kvar hishchisu hazayos adeos." Right, and this will not be known to a person that simply has no das. Right, simply his ability to understand those people that are foolish and their ability to understand is compromised. They won't be able to comprehend this idea. Right, and then he goes on. But really, right, a person would have to be a total fool not to understand this. Then he goes on to say this idea is difficult for a person to perceive, right? So which one is it? Is it that if a person can't understand, he's a total fool? Or is it, no, it's a really difficult idea to understand. And he says even great people, it's a very hard thing to reach the level of Avraham Avinu, right? To really operate on total Shema, right? So we said no, that the thing is that there are two levels of a person. One level is where a person can't comprehend the thing at all. Okay? He simply can't understand that idea. And then there's a person that can understand the idea. The idea makes sense to him, but it's a very hard thing to actually follow in practice. Right? A person can understand that this is the greatest life and that it doesn't make sense to do this for something else. Right? But then when he actually utilizes that, it's, you know, he somehow in the back of his mind he thinks he's going to get a reward. Okay, so intellectually he knows it's true that this is the greatest thing, but emotionally he doesn't really sense that this is the greatest thing, you know, that he senses there are greater things than that. To him, you know, certain enjoyments or fantasies that he has still reside in his mind, and therefore he's still looking forward to some kind of fantasy, immortality, whatever it is, even though he knows that that's a total fantasy, but in some sense, that fantasy continues in his life. So therefore, even though intellectually he knows that it's false, but practically, to live on the level of Lishma is a very difficult thing for most people. Most people still have emotional attachments, and they're not really operating on the level of Lishma. Okay? So this is actually something that Rabbi Chait mentioned that, and actually we did in the Rambam, in Galen. The Rambam has a category called Chulianushis. Okay, diseases of man. Okay, diseases which are only belong to man. Okay, and the Rambam calls it a disease. Okay, that imperfections in ideas and mitos, he calls it disease. Okay, so actually, I mean, you realize that the term disease, you know, a person, you know, if you speak to a psychiatrist, he would not call a person that doesn't understand certain ideas, or that his opinions don't allow him to comprehend a certain logical idea, he would not call that person diseased. He wouldn't call the person a diseased person. He would not consider that a disease. Okay, so the term disease, what you call an illness, really depends on what you're, I mean, what does that depend upon? I mean, disease is a relative term, really. Right? I mean, disease, the definition of disease is something that impairs the function of a person. Right, like if a person, let's say for instance, a person has bad eye-hand coordination, right, and they can't play baseball. I mean, they cannot hit a ball. Okay, so I mean that's an impairment in a function. Okay, but nobody would call that a disease. Right, but yet there is something he can't do. He is limited in a certain function. But nobody's going to call that a disease, right? So the term disease depends on how you define the function of man. Now, as if you define the function of man as a person that is capable of playing baseball, and that is the purpose of man, right? So then you will say that if a person has this kind of inability, you'll call that a disease, and you'll try to look for a way to cure it, right? Now, of course, if the hand-eye coordination is such that now he can't function in everyday life, right, in functions that we consider part of man, right? Like the person can't walk down the street, well, then that becomes a disease. Right? So the term disease really is dependent on what your definition of the function of man is. So to a psychiatrist, the function of man, if a person could function in society and achieve happiness, normal happiness, psychological happiness, that is the function of man. So anything that doesn't interfere with that function, he will never call a disease. Right? So if a person is incapable of understanding a certain philosophy, okay, and he has other ideas that to a philosopher are false, that really, you know, that's not a main function. That's like a person can't play baseball. Okay, so you have a crazy philosophy. But in your practical life and your psychological life, you could be perfectly happy. Right? So a psychiatrist will never call it a disease. Right? But to the Rambam, one of the functions, the main function of man, is his ability to comprehend truth. So if a person has something that impairs that function, according to the Rambam, that will be the greatest disease. Right? And as if that is the ultimate function of man, that anything that impairs that function will have to be the greatest disease. Right? So what you apply the term disease to really depends on how you look at man.
This might sound like a silly question, but it seems like based on that definition, how come we wouldn't use that word for like a tree? Like the tree is diseased because it can't grow. Or anything else. Like why is it just for man?
Well, you would. In other words, there are disease. Right, there are any living organism, right, you will apply the term disease. In other words, there are diseases of trees.
Of grass, they would say.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. So. In other words, anything, a biologist who's studying grass, I mean, a person, you know, when you have a landscaper, so he puts down certain chemicals, you know, because the grass could become, a certain disease will hit the grass. I mean, they say about trees, that these, there's certain blight that will attack a tree and it'll carry from tree to tree, right. But the disease will be defined because it will impair the function of the tree. It will impair the function of the tree. So really, that's why an animal also has a disease. Anything that's a functional entity, you know, that has a function, a living organism that actually functions, right, you're going to use the term disease. Like a rock, I don't think you would use the term disease because there is no function. It's just material. It's just substance. But something that's a living organism, right, it has a certain function. It functions in a certain way. And anything that will impair that function, that's how we describe that with disease. Anything that impairs that function. Right? So, right, but that will depend on what you consider the function of that thing. And what you consider the function of that thing is dependent on how you define the object. What's the purpose of that object? If the purpose of that object is to comprehend ideas, so anything that interferes with that is a disease, and it's the worst disease. Right? So the question is, what is the worst disease, according to the Rambam?
Isn't that based on what the primary function is?
Right, okay. So according to Rambam, the primary function, the main function of man is thinking, right? So, yeah.
Well, I'll think about it. We were talking about this thing recently.
Like, oh, really?
The function of man is...
Yeah. Function of man. Right, so according to the Yadus, the main purpose of man is to apprehend the truth, to gain knowledge of the truth.
And once he has that truth, then... Like, what's the next step, you know? Like, is he supposed to apply it? Is he supposed to gain truth? And then like, is that the end?
Right. That is what man seeks. Man really spends his whole life acquiring truth, searching for truth. That's what he enjoys. That's the activity that really is the greatest activity for man, using his intellect to uncover ideas and to see new concepts and discover truths. I mean, that's really what man was designed for, I mean, that's the differentiating feature in man, right? Because man is really, aside from his intelligence, he's another form of animal. I mean, in terms of his body, he has all the functionality of animal. He eats, sleeps, drinks, all these things, right? But the differentiating feature in man is his ability to uncover truth, right? So in that area, in that function, that's the function that differentiates him. And when he utilizes that function, he's functioning as a man. Whereas if the man is involved in eating all day, so in terms of that function, he's no different than a cow. I mean, that's the function that he shares in common with every other part of the animal kingdom. Right? So the function of searching for the truth, that is really what differentiates him, and that's why that's a very enjoyable activity. Because that's really tied into the main part of his essence. That's really what affords him the greatest satisfaction. To do that, to see ideas and see truth. That is something that's extremely enjoyable. So insofar as he partakes in that, he's really doing an activity that man was built for. That's what the guy was built for. You know, if you just study his nature, you see, what's that thing doing there? You know what I mean? It's not there for no reason. And it's an activity that once he gets involved in, he derives extreme enjoyment from. Yeah?
According to that, you said that, you know, what separates man from animal.
Yeah.
Right? What makes man a man is his intellect, because you don't see that in any other animal.
That's right.
But why, according to that line of reasoning, you could say the same by emotions. And what separates man from animal is the fact that he has a fantasy, that he can fantasize.
Right,
but that's his essence.
Right, because the thing is that the instinctual animal has also. Right, instinctual drives an animal has. Okay? What differentiates the instinctual drive of man is since he has this intellect. That's what's responsible for fantasies, because he has an intellect, he starts thinking about different things. He's able to think the future, all these things. So all of those things are a byproduct of this central part of his nature. Okay?
A more complicated instinct.
It's more complicated, isn't it?
That's
right. But the qualitative thing that he has different, he has one thing qualitatively different. And that's his ability to uncover the truth.
Because, like, these emotions and instincts are found in animals, just to a greater degree in men. But
when
you're talking about the intellect, there's not...
That's totally
not
different.
Even any of that.
That is a totally different thing. Mm-hmm. Right. That's not necessarily a proof that a person should engage in this, because maybe a person will say, okay, that's very nice, that's what's different, but maybe it's a better life to follow my animal part. Who says the best life is to follow the part of me that differentiates me? That may be my essence, but maybe it's a better life to follow the parts that I share in common with animal, right? Okay, but yeah.
Well, this is what I said to Zach. I don't know if it works, but... Let's say when you're talking about an axe, and let's say you define axe as something that chops.
Right.
So you'd say that the greatest axe is something that chops to the greatest degree.
Right.
So that one axe is superior to another if it can chop better.
Right.
So you see that the essence of man is his ability to think rationally. So you say that the greatest man is the one that is able to do that to the best degree, to fulfill that
right.
function to the best degree.
Right.
Let's say you want to be the greatest man, though.
Right, but the thing, right, in other words, if you want to show a person why this is the best life, you have to show why it is the most beneficial for him to engage in this life. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the reason why it's the most beneficial, for, yeah.
Okay,
get it.
We were talking about that, I want to see it. Because if, right, so if you used to define, like we just define man as, right, thinking is his essence, right, his intellect. So if you were to use. So let's say like a spoon, right? So if you try to use a spoon as a fork, right? So it would be going against, it's not in line with what it's for, right?
Right.
So when a man is not doing what his essence is,
right.
He's going to be in a natural conflict because he's going to be engaging parts that aren't man, right?
Right.
But there's going to be a part of man that just isn't going to be, his essence isn't going to be engaged. So he'll always be in conflict and that's going to cause him not to be happy.
But what if that gives him fulfillment?
what if
someone just enjoys eating all day?
I think right here that he's still not engaging his essence, so he's going to be in conflict. You could say he enjoys it, but
Right. I mean, I think you're gonna
say. So what's wrong with being in conflict?
It's painful. We're trying to see what's gonna be the less, what's most beneficial for a person, not to be in the least amount of pain as possible.
See, there's one type of argument. The argument that you're using, the approach you're using is, you know, that a thing has a nature, and the activity that's most in line with its nature is going to be the best activity for that thing, which is true. That's a true argument. But if you want to show in practice, practically speaking, right, that a person can really see that that is true in practice, then I think it would be beneficial to bring in, to just show practically, bring in the idea that if you have two activities that are both enjoyable, and you have one activity that a person can engage in on a constant basis, and another activity that is limited, so which activity would be greater for the person to follow, right? Now, thinking is an activity that a person enjoys, and it's not limited to any kind of physical conditions, right? A person can sit and think all day. He doesn't get tired. He doesn't need any kind of setup, no extraneous type of situation, right? It's an internal activity that a person could enjoy on a constant basis. Any other activity that a person enjoys is a contingent enjoyment. It depends on certain conditions. Like if a person wants to enjoy eating, that's a very limited thing because immediately starts to get full and that's it. The enjoyment is over. Right, so that's not an activity that a person could partake of to the same degree as thinking. And if you choose any other activity aside from thinking, it's going to be an activity where the person derives enjoyment from something, some aspect of the external world. So he's always contingent on those conditions. Let's say a person enjoys playing basketball. Right? Okay, that's very good, but the body gets tired. He's dependent on the external conditions. He has to have the court. He has to have all of these things. Right, if his body breaks down, all of these things are going to limit his ability to involve himself in that activity. So any activity, any enjoyment, aside from thinking, that you're going to choose is going to be limited. But the only activity that a person could engage in fully, where he's not constrained by the conditions or by time, is thought. So therefore, even assuming that both enjoyments, and as the philosophic argument that he's really designed for this, that's really an argument that shows that it stands to reason that this enjoyment should be superior qualitatively. But even if you assume, even if you say, listen, you know, different people enjoy different things. You know, we don't want to make assumptions. So let's just assume that all the enjoyments are equal. Okay. So, but even if you assume all of the activities are equal, it still is going to come out that thinking is going to be far superior. Because quantitatively speaking, if you have two things, equal enjoyments, and one you can do an hour a day, and the other you can do 10 hours a day, so the one you can do 10 hours a day is definitely going to be much more satisfying to a person than the one you can do 1 hour. And therefore, if a person wants to know, where should I put my energy? Which kind of enjoyable activity should I put my energy in? It makes the most sense to put your energy in something that you're totally unlimited. Right? God puts all his energy into becoming the greatest basketball player, and then he can only do a certain amount of hours a day, and then by the time he hits a certain age, that's it. His life is over. Right? A person puts his energy into the enjoyment of thinking. It's a constant enjoyment, and it's one that lasts his whole life. So that has to be superior for man. I mean, if you pick, in other words, the trick is really, I think what fools people is because people don't think in terms of the broad picture. They think about 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, could you prove to me that for 5 minutes, thinking will be better than eating this ice cream soda? That's going to be a very difficult thing to do. Right? You're taking a snapshot and you're saying, in these 5 minutes, where will I derive more enjoyment? Well, it may be you could find some enjoyment that will be much greater than thinking for 5 minutes. You know, especially if the person's thinking and whatever, he's, you know, distracted or he can't get into it, right? And another thing you can get, a tremendous instantaneous enjoyment. That may be true, even if that were true, right? But that's really what the person's looking at. He's looking at, for 5 minutes, this is a fantastic enjoyment. Yes, for 5 minutes, but what do you do for the rest of your life? You know what I mean? In other words, when a person decides on a path of life, he has to look at the broad picture. Right? So that's really, you see, that's really, that's an argument, you know, that was used by the ancients. They said, if a person will want the enjoyment of, let's say, the enjoyment of eating or the enjoyment of sex, if he'll consider that a superior enjoyment, right? So the argument against that is that in order for a person to enjoy eating, he has to be hungry, right? You can't enjoy eating if you're not hungry, right? Now, hunger is pain. Now, if a person wants that kind of enjoyment, I can give you that enjoyment all day long. Put itching powder on. You'd be in tremendous pain, and when you scratch your back, the enjoyment will be so fantastic. You know what I mean? So that's really what they're saying. In other words, if you are trying to just take a 1 minute, if you're trying to show me, to ask me, what will be a fabulous enjoyment for 1 minute, I can give you a lot of enjoyments. You know what I mean? Put a guy in a torture cell for a year and let him out. He'll have the greatest rush of enjoyment. For that 1 minute, he'll have the greatest excitement. True. You know what I mean? But who's going to do that? Right? In other words, you can't evaluate a course of life based on a 1 minute enjoyment. Right? So that's the point. The point is you have to look at it in a rational way. And rationally speaking, you want to decide what course of action is the best approach for your life. So you can't look at 1 minute. You have to look at the entire scheme of things. You know what I mean? So that's what they're saying. Now, a person may have to, let's say a person is not trained in thinking. He may have to spend, you know, a year or 2 years or 3 years where he gets very little enjoyment. It's torture. You know what I mean? He's really training himself and he's going through a lot of work. Right? But the point is, why is he doing that? He's doing that because his life is more than 3 years. If his life was on 3 years, then he'd have a different cheshbon. Right? I mean, I'm going to spend all this time killing myself and knocking my teeth out to get all of the foundations when that's it. I'm not going to have more than 3 years. So that would be a bad cheshbon. Right? But you can't make a cheshbon like that. A cheshbon has to be in terms of your life. So that's what we're saying. If you compare two activities over in terms of human life, and one activity has no limitation and the other is limited to 1 hour, you don't say, well, for that 1 hour it's going to be great. Yeah, but for that 1 hour you can have the same pleasure in learning, and the pleasure in learning continues for the next 10 hours. You know what I mean? But I think emotionally, you know, you get like sort of, oh, if I could just have that thing, right? And you forget about the factors that really go into practical life. That's, you know, you're just imagining a certain false thing. But really, in terms of practical life, the enjoyment from learning is something that's that goes on and on.
So, yeah. If a guy was going to die in 6 months, and he came and said, what would you advise I do for about 6 months?
Well, I'm not too good at giving that kind of advice. For the next 6 months? Well, you know, I would say he should study things that are on his level that he can enjoy. I would not recommend that he take a course of study that will not reap any kind of knowledge, but will take around 2 years to get to that knowledge. I wouldn't recommend that. I would say he should study something that will be meaningful to him right now. And that a person really should always do. I mean, even when a person is going through, you know, studies to improve his, you know, there's a certain amount of study that, let's say, for instance, in Gemara, right? So there's a certain amount of time a person spends studying Bakiyas, just going through Blot of Gemara, gaining facts, right? But I would never recommend that a person do that all day long, because what's the purpose of that? I mean, the point is that at every stage, a person only improves if he engages himself in the enjoyment of learning. It has to be an enjoyable activity. If a person sits, I mean, I was giving an example of, you know, spending 3 years. But if a person sits and really just doesn't enjoy the activity, I don't think it's really that much improvement. You know what I mean? I would rather see a person sit for 10 minutes a day and really enjoy the idea, really get the idea and enjoy it, than spend 10 hours and just gathering facts and covering ground and not have the enjoyment. So, I mean, the main thing in the learning really is the enjoyment. That's really the main thing. You know? Now, of course, when a person starts out, the enjoyment is not as great as when the person's been learning for 10 years. Then certainly he's much more into it. The enjoyment is greater.
Right,
but at each step of the way, the person should partake of the enjoyment that he can get of the learning.
Right, you're saying there's always something that a person can get enjoyment from.
That's right.
Even if it's
exactly.
The highest level.
That's right.
Okay.
Even if it's the highest level, right. So that's really the idea of why it's a greater enjoyment. You know, and of course, the more a person could engage in an activity, the more he could direct his energies. He could become totally involved. In other words, something that a person can only engage in on a limited basis, right? Like, let's say there's a certain enjoyment that really is very limited. You know, you could play basketball for 1 hour, 1 hour a day, right? So the person that could play 5 hours a day certainly gets much more into it and is going to gain a much greater enjoyment out of it. So it's the same thing with learning. Not only are you able to engage in it a longer amount of time, but as you increase the amount of time you're into it, your energy is more directed towards it. So you're going to have greater enjoyment because of that. Okay, but really, yeah. Mm-hmm. But really, that's what the Rambam is saying. So the Rambam is saying that's the idea of Lishma. The idea of Lishma is that a person sits and learns because he enjoys the ideas. It's an enjoyable life. And if a person has that Lishma, then he doesn't think, well, what am I going to get in return for this? That's an absurd thing to him. That would be like saying, if I get this greatest thing in the world, what will I get in exchange? Does that make sense? So that's really the conflict. When a person sees the idea, but that doesn't mean that he's totally, that all of his enjoyment comes from learning. So insofar as a person's enjoys learning, he's going to do it lishma, he's going to do it for the learning itself. But insofar as his energy is somewhere else, he's thinking about other enjoyments, so then he's not totally, you know, then he's going to be wanting the other thing. You know, then insofar as that's concerned, he's not lishma. So that's really what it depends upon. Yeah.
Back to the practical, like application list, but like theoretically, so let's say all things were equal, and somehow a guy could arrange for every hour of the day, he could have another instinctual pleasure.
Right.
And it would always come. Like
right.
There were no outside thing.
Right.
Wouldn't that guy also be frustrated, though? Like, wouldn't it still not be as enjoyable?
Why? Why?
I don't know.
Well, let's say, for instance, you're saying, let's say, for instance...
All things are equal, though.
What?
Well, you just set it up, though. It's hard. You said all things are equal.
No, but the argument we were using before was that if it's the same pleasure from learning and from another instinctual pleasure, but just quantitatively, you could do it longer.
Right.
Well, now let's say you could do that one longer. There would still be something frustrating about it. My question is what?
Let's say you could do. You mean let's say you could find an activity that would somehow you'd be able to do without any limitation. Another activity aside from learning.
One activity, but just like you could arrange your day such that, you know, like you were some king and you can get anything.
Right, okay. Yeah, but the point is like this. See, the point is every activity is contingent on the physical world, right? So let's say the person, whatever it is, let's say the person is going to, this hour, the person can play tennis, right? So his tennis partner gets sick. So you can be the greatest king in the world, but obviously you're right. Insofar as the guy has control over the physical world, he is going to be more in control of things. I mean, a person that is totally has no ability to control the world, you know, he has no access to any kinds of wealth or anything like that, so it's going to be harder for him. Right, that's true. But even if a person has access, right, he has everything in his access, that still doesn't do it because intrinsically he doesn't have control. You know what I mean? A guy's a multi-billionaire. Fine, but that only means that he controls certain factors that other people don't, right? Like he could get his own private tennis course, fine. But even his own private tennis course, right? The heat goes out. I mean, he still has the same limitations as everybody else. The only thing is he's eliminating certain things. He doesn't have to wait in line to play tennis, fine. And what about when his tennis racket breaks? You know what I mean? Intrinsically, the physical world is not under his control. So therefore, there's no way to change that. I mean, if you change that, you're changing the world. You're just saying, well, let's imagine there's a world where I have total control. Tennis rackets never break. And my body never tires. Okay, that's a different world.
He makes every shot.
and he makes every shot, and is the partner never gets sick, and all of these things, and it stays all day long.
Can we go with that case? Wouldn't that guy still be frustrated?
Would that, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, sorry. I have a question.
Oh, okay. Would that guy be frustrated?
In this imaginary world, yeah. Like, it seems like he would still... Like,
not according to our argument.
Also, but you're cheating the physical.
Not according to our argument. And that is, if a person... That's okay, so that would be a different question. Now, you're saying, let's say a person had unlimited...
Yeah, I guess it's too crazy.
We right? Would he still get the same measure of enjoyment? What you're asking really is...
Physical.
What you're asking is, qualitatively, could you show that this enjoyment really is greater?
Yeah, that's a separate thing.
Yeah, that's a separate thing. See, that would be in line with what you're saying. I mean, but, you know, that's not a simple idea. But what you're saying is that really man intrinsically loves thinking more than the physical. That's an area that he really affords much greater pleasure, which I think is true. But that you see, the proof of that really is, maybe there's a philosophic proof, but I think the main proof of that is when you get involved in it. And you see for yourself what the enjoyment is, that's the real proof. In other words, these proofs are to show a person rationally, right, that this is going to be the greatest enjoyment. You see? But the real convincing thing, could a person really be convinced? What's the real conviction? The real conviction is when you experience it, you say, whoa, this is great. In other words, you can give the guy proofs all day long that, eating ice cream is a fantastic thing. And maybe it's rational for him to do that. But you can't compare his conviction before and after. Because when it comes down to it is an experience. Right? So let's say, for instance, you're speaking to a guy who simply does not enjoy learning. I mean, then the proof is not going to help him because he does not have that experience. So it's not going to be rational for him to do that. In other words, if he does not enjoy learning and he has no way to get that enjoyment, I wouldn't recommend that guy live this kind of life. I mean, he's going to be miserable. That's not a good life for him. But what we're saying is that when the normal person, the normal mind, it is rational. And the fact is that once the guy engages and gets into it, he will see that this is a greater enjoyment. Because when you look at people that are into it, it is a totally different enjoyment. And they look back at those other enjoyments and they go, they're not even interested in it. There's no interest in that enjoyment. That enjoyment doesn't hold the same. Yeah.
So we're saying, right, so by the practical, right?
Yeah.
So that, so we're saying also a test bracket would break and you get sick. Basically, everything's subject to physical deterioration, right?
Right.
So that's what physical pleasure is rooted in.
Right.
But as human beings, we are also rooted in the physical, right?
That's right.
But we happen to have a non-physical element in us, and we could perceive ideas that are non-physical.
That's right.
But we're still rooted in the physical. So let's say something happens, like you're in a car accident and you have brain damage.
That's right. That's
so you're also not going to be able to access your intellect anymore.
That's right.
So are we just saying that there's less factors that will affect you?
That's
so
right.
Just a less amount of factors.
That's
but,
right.
But also it could be, right?
That's right. Now, so you're limited, every person is limited by the physical. And as a person becomes deathly ill, he's not going to be involved in learning.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're just saying, insofar as he is capable of functioning, which function should he choose? Insofar as he loses functionality, well, then that's it. There's nothing to talk about. But insofar as he's a functioning being, which function will afford him a greater amount of time of enjoyment? You know what I mean? Now, there can't be any... there's no question that if you look at the two enjoyments, there's no question that one enjoyment cannot possibly be done the same amount of hours a day as the other enjoyment. I mean, it's an impossibility.
Yeah. So let's say this. So for this example, you're saying, assume that these two pleasures are equal. But let's say this guy is saying that learning is inherently worse,
right?
And the physical pleasures are better.
That's right.
So he's going to say, what's the difference? How much time?
Yeah, but you see,
I can get involved.
Yeah, but you see, when we study the best way of life, we have to study objectively, right? We have to say, for man, generally speaking, these are two enjoyments. Right, and there's no reason to say one is better than the other, so we'll assume they're equal. And now we want to know objectively. We can only compare objective factors. Objectively, which enjoyment will afford him a greater, quantitatively greater pleasure? Which one? right? Now, if you're going to bring in him, that's true, there's a lot of factors, right? He may be sick. He may not be able to learn. But that we can't, that just means he can't get the greatest enjoyment for man. In other words, let's say we'll prove that tennis is the greatest enjoyment. But this guy, whatever, his arm is, he has a deficient arm and he can't play. So then we'll have to say that that man cannot get the greatest enjoyment that man is capable of because of his deficiency. That could be. But we want to know, really, in the ideal state, what is the greatest enjoyment that a man could partake of, assuming he is free to choose anything. Right? That's what we want to prove. So that, we're saying, assuming a man is free to choose any enjoyment, he could have his pick of any enjoyment, which one should a rational person take? So that, we're saying, that a person should choose learning. Because he will be able to have it on a constant basis, whereas the other enjoyments will be very limited. Now, if you're telling me the guy's not free to choose, okay, so there's nothing to talk about. Not free to choose.
So, it sounds like you're saying the point is that the physical is inherently limited?
It's inherently limited.
Okay.
It's inherently limited.
So, you're saying because it's dependent on certain conditions?
That's right. That's right. It's dependent on conditions, on these conditions, and if you take, and since you have no, if you had total control over those conditions, so then you're right. So then it'd be no problem. But since you don't have control of the conditions, and they're changing conditions, you're going to definitely, you definitely have a less opportunity to enjoy those other things. This is the thing that you can have the greatest opportunity to enjoy.
Isn't that really the idea of the ketos? They'll have like the physical, but
They'll have the physical, it'll be unlimited pleasure. That's right. Which of course is an impossibility. But that's there.
Right. So why, okay. This might be a little backwards. So why is Ram saying that that's not possible?
It's impossible because a physical thing by nature means it breaks down. Right? Let's say eating. The enjoyment of eating, right? Are you going to enjoy eating without being hungry? It's impossible. It's impossible. So I don't care where it is, Olam Haba or this world. Could a person enjoy eating without being hungry? No. Right? Which means that he has to first go through the pain of the hunger, and then once he fills up, he can't enjoy it anymore. So it means the enjoyment is a 10-minute enjoyment. Okay, great.
So let's say they would say that God would set it up in a certain way so that they can get the most enjoyment out of it. So I'm saying that that's just...
It's an impossibility. It's an impossibility. You're right. You're trying to imagine a pleasure that doesn't exist. You're saying, God's going to set it up that I'm going to enjoy eating, which is the satisfaction of a hunger, without the hunger. I mean, okay, so you're talking about a fantasy that God will create an enjoyment that doesn't exist. Okay, but we have to work with what we know, the given. Now, it has to be, the philosophy is knowledge of reality. Now, what's reality? You have to look at reality. You can't make up a new reality. Go, well, why didn't God create it that I could have enjoyment without thinking, the greatest enjoyment without thinking, and without doing anything, and without working? That's not philosophy anymore. That's fantasy. Now, philosophy means you're looking at reality, and you're observing reality, and you're seeing what is the reality. Now, this is the reality. You know what I mean? The reality is that any enjoyment you have from the physical world is subject to interruption. That's the reality. And it's impossible that it should be otherwise. Because if it would be otherwise, it wouldn't be physical. Then you'd be saying it's a thing that doesn't change. And physical by nature, that's the nature of the physical. That it deteriorates, that it's subject to change. If you have a thing that undergoes no change and has no attributes that could be removed, that's not a physical thing. So you're talking about a number. Number one. It's not physical. But no attributes, can't change, it's always one. It's infinite, it's not subject to time, so it's not a physical thing. But if you're talking about deriving enjoyment from the physical world, you're talking about deriving from objects that contain attributes that are subject to change, subject to deterioration, and subject to all of these conditions. So then intrinsically, your enjoyment is going to have to be subject to those same things. So you're choosing a life which is subject to all these alterations. That each alteration affects your enjoyment. and so you're creating a life that your happiness is dependent on whether it's raining outside or sunny or snowing. I mean, why would a person do that? I mean, let's say I can give you a life that, what do you call it, that nothing changes. Well, you'd say immediately, of course, I'll take that. Why should I have a life where if I go skiing, depends on whether it snows? Let's say I can give you a life where you can go skiing and it's not dependent on anything. You say, oh, that'd be great. Well, that's what you have. The only thing is not skiing.
What someone would say, like, instead of changing all the outside circumstances, like, what if God made man differently such that he got enjoyment from things like that? But then that's not man anymore.
That's not man anymore. Right? You're making up a new world. You're saying, let's say God made the world physical things without attributes, without deterioration, without change. I mean, that's not physical. Physical, that's the definition of the physical. Then you're talking about the ideational. That you're describing the ideational, and you're trying to apply that to the physical. What if the physical world were exactly like the ideational? Then I'd have a great time. True.
That's like one of the four categories.
What do you mean? Four kitos. That's right. You're trying to say, what if physical were not physical? I mean, it's a contradiction. It's a contradiction. You're trying to imagine a contradiction. You can't, you know. Unfortunately, it doesn't work. Yeah.
I think I once heard another argument for proof of learning that I'm not really. Maybe you can elaborate if it's even correct. But that. So let's say you're involved in like physical pleasure, right?
Right.
So since it's physical pleasure, when something else physical happens around you, not even affecting your pleasure directly. Let's just say like a person walks by.
Right.
Right. So right. Your pleasure could be interrupted. Because since it's in the physicality, or another physical thing enters your
right.
awareness, I guess, right? So that can affect your pleasure. But when you're thinking, right, and you're involved in something that's not physical,
right.
If something were to walk by, theoretically, right, it shouldn't affect your not physical. Is that, I mean,
right, you see what that is, in other words, in the thing is like this, in enjoyment, you have two factors. I mean, basically, if you want to get down to it, right, the basis for the argument is with enjoyments, whenever a person engages in an enjoyment or an activity, there's always two factors to consider. There's the quantitative factor, and then there's the qualitative factor, right? So the quantitative factor is what we've discussed, that quantitatively, learning is superior because you can engage in it more hours a day. So that's quantitative. So that's assuming if you have two things that are the same qualitative pleasure, right, and one is greater quantitatively, so it's superior because of its quantitative superiority, right? But now there's an argument to say that there's also a qualitative, that learning is also qualitatively better, okay? So what that argument is as follows. What that argument is that an enjoyment, the amount of pleasure you can get from an enjoyment depends on one thing. Qualitatively speaking, it depends on the amount of energy that a person could channel to that enjoyment. In other words, if I am, let's say, eating a meal, but the amount of energy that I have for that meal is not great, then the enjoyment is not great. For instance, let's say I'm eating a meal, and I'm talking to somebody, and I'm distracted by the conversation, right? So you'll notice the meal goes by, and like you feel like you didn't even savor it, right? Why is that? Because the amount of mental energy that was directed towards that enjoyment was small. But let's say a person has no distraction, and he sits, and he really involves himself, and engages, and savors the meal. He feels like, he really enjoyed himself, right? That's because he's directing all of his energy to that area, right? So the amount of energy that a person has to go in a certain area, that's going to be the amount of satisfaction he has, right? So if a person's very into tennis, he enjoys it much more. A person's just getting into it, there's not that much energy into it. So the enjoyment is less, right? So the amount of satisfaction depends on how much energy there is there that's seeking satisfaction, okay? So therefore, the argument is like this. The argument is, let's say you have two people, right? One guy is playing tennis, and one guy's thinking. Okay? And each guy has the same amount of energy towards both things. Each guy is totally into it. It's his whole life. This guy's whole life is tennis, and this guy's whole life is learning. So he has all of his energy into the game. Right? Okay. So, so the argument is the person that's involved in learning must still have more energy for the enjoyment of learning than the guy who's playing tennis. Why? Because the question is, let's say a cat walks across the court, and you have a guy sitting there learning and a guy playing tennis, right? So who will notice the cat first? So the guy who's learning, he won't notice the cat at all. He's totally involved in learning, right? But the guy who's playing tennis, he has to notice the cat because that's going to interfere with the game. In other words, in order to play tennis, there must be a certain amount of mental energy which is directed towards making sure the conditions of the court are intact, right? So if he sees a cat going across the court, he'll notice right away, which means his energy, some of his energy, is not directed towards tennis, the enjoyment, the activity itself. It's directed peripherally, right, to seeing if there's anything that's interfering with him, because he has to make sure the conditions remain intact, right? So because of that, since his enjoyment occurs in the physical world, anytime you engage in that activity, you're always going to have a certain amount of energy directed towards securing, making sure things are intact, right? So that's going to reduce the amount of energy. It's like having a meal and having a guy talk to you. You want the guy to shut up, you want to enjoy a meal, right? So the same thing, that any activity that occurs in the physical world, there's a certain amount of energy that can't be directed towards the enjoyment. Whereas the learning, you don't need it at all. A guy could be sitting learning, he doesn't even know where he is. So a guy sitting at a meal, you know, he still has to make sure different things, you know, the glass is there or whatever it is, people are coming by, he's going to notice all these things. Why? Because he's operating in the physical world, so he has to have a certain amount of energy to know where he is and know what he's doing, right? And that's not really part of the enjoyment of the eating. So that takes away from his enjoyment. So a guy who's learning, so not only does he have a quantitative advantage, but he's going to have a qualitative advantage too. Because he's going to be able to involve himself in the activity to a greater extent than any other activity that man could do. Right? Guy sitting there, he doesn't even know what's happening. Somebody's walking in the room and turning the light on and off. He doesn't even notice. That means there's no energy. All his energy is involved in learning. A guy sitting eating a meal, somebody turns the light on and off, and what are you doing? So therefore, he's going to have qualitatively greater enjoyment because he's more involved in the activity. So therefore, that last argument shows that not only is learning superior quantitatively, but it's really superior qualitatively too. The amount of pleasure you could get from it qualitatively, even within that minute, even if you compare this activity on a minute-by-minute basis, it's still greater. It's still a greater activity, greater drawing. Yeah.
This is a side question. It might be too big to take up now, but when you say like he has his energy involved in it, like I always hear about that kind of energy that you could say I'm going to put energy into eating, energy into thinking,
right?
You know? And then, but then there's also energy used in the sense that like his energy is more in that area, and that's like a hard thing to change. You know what I mean?
That's the same thing. That his energy is in an area, and it means he has an interest in that area.
But it seems like one is more like a temporary thing, like I could put it here, and I could put it here, and I could put it there. And one is more like his whole life is around.
Well, yeah, but you see. I mean, I thought you were going to ask, like, energy, like, meaning a guy, you know, it takes energy to lift things. Like, no, okay, because that I want let's just clarify that. In other words, by energy, we don't mean, like, a guy uses a lot of energy, strength, to do something. You know, that's physical energy. But when we say energy, really, we mean the interest of the mind. When the mind is, when a person, the emotions, whatever it is, when a person is interested in an area and he's pursuing it, that means there's a certain, we call it energy. There's a certain energy that he's going after that thing, right? And the reason why you call it energy, you see, you have to understand, the reason why the concept really of energy is this, that like the Rambam says that arayas, a person's desire for sexual enjoyment, is a very strong drive in man, and he says that the only way to really conquer that and to get that under control is for a person to involve himself in learning. Because when a person involves himself in learning, now he has that becomes a very interesting thing to him, and he loses an interest in other things. Right? So the concept there is really that a person has a certain sum of interest. We call it energy, but a certain sum of desire. Right? So this sum of desire could be used for different areas. He's not unlimited, it's a certain sum of desire. So if he channels his desire or his energy to this area, it's going to have to take away from that area. Because he's a limited being, so he has a certain amount of energy of interest. And if his interest is all in one area, you notice he's not interested in other areas. And insofar as he loses his interest in this area, then he starts looking for other things. He's bored. What can I do? Right? Bored means he has energy that he's not satisfying. He's bored. I got to do something. Right? That desire to do something is energy. That's what we mean by that desire. And that desire is transferable. In other words, if it increases in one area, it decreases in the other. It's like a riverbed, like the ancients talked about a riverbed. If you have a riverbed and you have different outlets, right, and you stop one up, you see the water becomes much stronger in the other one, right? And then if you let this go, the water, right? So the same thing with man. He has a certain amount of desire, and it can be distributed over different areas. And insofar as it goes to one area, you take away from the other area, right? So that's the thing. It means if he has all his energy in one area, it's going to be very hard. It means he's fixed to that thing. The energy is fixed to that thing. You know what I mean? And it's something that's very hard to withdraw from. If the person can go from one thing to another, right, it means it's not really a very attractive thing to him. It means he could temporarily engage in it and it occupies him, but it doesn't keep his energy. It doesn't keep his interest. You know what I mean? The attraction isn't there. But the greater the attraction, the more it's going to draw his energy. You know what I mean? So that's the thing. When a person starts out learning, the attraction is low because, you know, he doesn't have the same, his whole drive is not in that area. But as he goes, as he does it more and more, so then the attraction becomes greater. He enjoys it more. Once he enjoys it, then more energy is, now if you try to stop him from learning, he's going to be bored. He's going to be bored with other things. Why is he bored? Because he's always looking for that then. You know what I mean? It's the same thing why a guy, when he starts off, he sits in class, he's bored because his interest is in other areas. You know what I mean? But as it switches, now the interest is in this. It goes away from that. So it's really one fluid thing. It's like a fluid thing. You know, it's not just... You know what I mean? Is that what you're...
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
And that's overall energy distribution is a hard thing to just overnight switch.
Right, overnight switch, right. That's right. But that's why, and so that's part of the argument. The argument is that the amount of enjoyment depends on that. Depends on your interest, your desire, and how much energy you have in the thing. So if your interest is great, then the enjoyment's going to be great. If your interest is very small, right, you got a little enjoyment, you're not really into it. So the thing is that's the same, that a person that's sitting and learning, they won't notice anything. He doesn't notice anything because all of his energy is in this thing. Now, if all of his energy is in this thing, he's going to enjoy more. Right? And the proof is, I mean, I think it's a good argument. And others, you know, it just popped into my mind, but I think it's a very good argument. Like, if you're sitting enjoying a meal and somebody comes along, you know, and starts distracting you, you want to get them away. Well, why do you want to get them away? I mean, you're eating the thing, so either it tastes good or it doesn't. But no, that shows you that the person knows that his enjoyment's contingent on how much, you know, he could focus on this thing. If he focuses on it, then he could really get the enjoyment. And he feels if he ate the whole meal and he wasn't focused, he feels like he was robbed of the, you're robbed of the enjoyment. Like, why were you talking to me while I was eating? You know, what do you mean? You ate the meal. I mean, is it a pleasure or not? See, pleasure not just, it's not a physical thing. It's the energy of the mind is directed to there, then you derive the enjoyment. But it's not because of the physical taste buds. You know? I mean, it's an interesting thing, you know? He wants to focus on the thing. That's the thing, that's the thing. So that really is, that's really what creates the enjoyment, psychologically. So the person thinking, he really can get that to the fullest level. Whereas no enjoyment in the physical world could you get that to the fullest level. It's an impossibility. A guy's going to play tennis and not look around, wonder, you know, be distracted by the court. It's an impossibility. He can't... Interesting. I mean, that's sort of like, I don't know, I never really played those games, but I'm just imagining, like, don't they have these things where you have, you put on this helmet and, like, you know, you
virtual
can move.
Reality?
Virtual, yeah. What is that?
Like you're on a plane or something?
Yeah. Like, just with minimal motion, you can.
I think so, yeah.
You know, it's sort of like trying to get out of having to. You know, put your energy, you know, you can just do the thing. You don't have to really accomplish things in the physical world through the actions. You know, you can just focus on the main thing through the mind. I mean, that's really what a person is looking for.
Has to totally block your face.
Block your face, and he's just, it's just occurring in front of his eyes. And it's as if he's doing everything. You know what I mean? So that's really, that would be, like, close to what a person's able to achieve in learning. You know, we don't have to. You can play tennis without actually going through the motions. Because the motions is extraneous to the game, really. You're doing those motions to get, to achieve that result. And it's the result that you really enjoy. It's not the motion. You know what I mean? It's an interesting thing.
That's why they call it virtual reality. That's not reality.
That's not reality. That's right. That's right. That's true. Right. So that's the thing. I mean, that's really the... that's really the argument of Lishma. You know, that's the idea behind Lishma. That when a person sees this idea, and then he's able to actually experience it and see in his own life the benefit and the enjoyment, then he's attracted to the thing. He does it not because of anything. There could be nothing. You can't give that person anything that would enhance his life the way it is right now. You can't give him a reward. It would be crazy. Anything you would give him would be inferior to what he has. It would be inferior. It would be like giving a reward that's inferior to the thing you got. That's an impossibility. But that idea still, you know, is... So that idea becomes more real to the person as he goes on. But until he reaches that, you know, until he... As he's going on the path... He's there to a certain degree, you know, he sees it to a certain amount, but his energy still, a lot of the energy is in a different area. But then there are people that will say, this whole thing is crazy, what are you talking about? I mean, learning? I mean, what do you mean? I think driving my car, buying new cars is the greatest thing. Quantitative, you know, they can't see the argument. As you try to explain this to, you know, some people... Right? They're going to say, that's crazy. You're making this stuff up. They can't accept it. You know what I mean? Now, you know, you go out in the street and tell this to, you know, the first person you meet, I don't know, walking down, there's some, you know, adult. I mean, they're not going to, this is not going to carry too much weight with them. You know what I mean? Because they have their lives and that's it. And you're just bringing in a thing that they're not, they have no shaykhs to, they have no relationship to. So, that's a person that's really philosophically psychotic. Like, you're showing them an idea that they really have no kasha against. They're not going to be able to ask your kasha, show me one step here that's wrong. Show me one step that's wrong. You're not going to be able to break anything down here. But they're going to say, listen, it sounds very nice, but, you know, it can't be. Right? I mean, that's most of the people that you tell this to. They're going to say that. You know... I don't believe it, you know. I can't, there's no kasha, but it's crazy. It's crazy. Right? So that is what the Rambam means. Those type of people, that's philosophic psychotic. Cannot see the idea.
Like you were saying, philosophical neurotic would say, I see the idea, I just can't do it.
Well,
psychotic
can't even see it. Right. Now, there are some people that see the idea, And they either can't do it, they say, listen, I agree with you, but, right? Or they could do it to a limited extent. I mean, every person is, you know, to a limited extent, to the extent that you could do it. A person could do it, let's say, an hour a day, but the rest of the time he says, listen, I can't do it. I mean, I just, you know. Okay, so to that degree, he's prevented from acting it out. But he sees it. He sees the idea fully. He's not saying it's wrong. He just could do it either not at all or to a limited extent. But really, the totally healthy person, the totally functional person is a person that sees it and he lives that life fully. So insofar as you do live life fully, that's perfection. That's what we're striving for, to have the complete health. So I mean, very few people are totally healthy in terms of action, but you know, there are, you know, but those are the two levels: the ability to see it and the ability to carry it out. So if you can't see it, that's a real problem. But if you can't carry it out, I mean, to an extent that you could, a person does.
Alrighty.
Okay. Shout out. Oh, switch.